Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hello and welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod. I'm Ryan Eichten, and with me again is Leo Sun. Leo, how you doing?
I'm doing great. It's good to be back. Shout out my man Andrew Dukowitz coming in for his first appearance of many, hopefully soon to come. But I'm happy to be back. It's my birthday week officially, nice. So that's upcoming. And it's going to be exciting because I get to bring my mental instability from watching Wolves games back home so my family could see it up front and in person, because they hear about it enough. They saw it when I was growing up, and hopefully they won't have to deal with it in person. But I'm excited. So
yeah, hopefully the Wolves can get you some nice, easy wins and you don't have to show that side of yourself. You can just show off your fun basketball team.
Well, they play the Miami Heat on my actual birthday, so I'm a little worried about that, but I'm sure I'm going to be triggered by Jimmy Butler doing something, if he even plays, but we'll see.
Yeah, Jimmy always finds a way not to play against the Wolves, but maybe that was a Karl Anthony Towns specific thing, and now that Kat is in New York, that Jimmy will suit up and play. Just looking up their schedule, it is not a back-to-back for them, so they don't have that excuse, although they're coming in from altitude, so maybe General Soreness will find some altitude soreness to sit out with. But likely Jimmy will be playing, and hopefully the Wolves can continue beating him up just like Kat did the other week.
Yes, sir.
All right, let's head into our main topics here. Howl or foul, discussing the topics of the week and whether we agree or disagree. Number one, Wolves coming off a loss against the San Antonio Spurs earlier in the week, lost to the Mavericks, as me and Dukowitz talked about. And then on Friday, in between those, they beat the Denver Nuggets. So a 1-2 week to finish 3-3 over these first six games. Some consternation on Wolves Twitter, at least from what I've seen, about the state of the team. So Leo, howl or foul that we should be worried about the Timberwolves?
I am going to say foul on this one. Though the loss of the Spurs was probably the most disappointing loss, I would say, of the entire season so far. I mean, we're six games in, right? So there is a ton of games left to be played. And I think there's a lot of obvious, very glaring areas of improvement. So it really depends on what type of lens you want to use. I'm generally a little bit more on the pessimistic side, but I feel like it's pretty clear that the turnover issue is a huge issue right now. Mm-hmm. Still, the Timberwolves are bottom six in turnover percentage. There's a lot of them that they're just throwing to absolutely nobody. These aren't forced turnovers. A lot of them are unforced. The Wolves are also bottom five in opponent turnover percentage as well, too, meaning that back in the day when they used to turn the ball over a lot in those Wolves back days, the 21-22 season, they were forcing a ton of turnovers to really balance that out. So they're missing that. So the turnover battle is just really tilted both ways in the wrong direction. The paint defense obviously has been an issue as well, too. Rudy is doing his damnedest. He's had to go against a lot of tough center competitions. I don't want to be making excuses for him, but he's gotten against the likes of AD, Domantas Sabonis, Nikola Jokic. You're talking about Victor Wembanyama. These are guys that either were all NBA or most likely will be all NBA soon. So it's been tough, but at the same time, that doesn't really excuse the entire Wolves team being bottom three and allowing opponent points in the paint. They're also bottom four themselves and points in the paint. So similar bad seesaw to kind of, they're giving up a lot of points. They're also not scoring a lot of points in the paint. And then lastly is in transition. I feel like that's been an issue as well too, giving up so many scores in transition. They're bottom 10 in transition points allowed, and they're also bottom 10 in points allowed off turnovers. So that kind of feeds in itself. There's been so many times, especially in that Nuggets game, where they miss a shot or they turn the ball over and the Nuggets are just gliding, just galloping down the other way and just find an easy one pass away, easy score. And so I think that's the issue. What about you? I mean, how do you think about the Wolves' start so far? Are you concerned?
Yeah, I think there's certainly aspects to be worried about. So Hal, in that case, but the general, like, overarching, like, I've just seen, like, still takes, like, the Cat trade ruined this team. And for me, like, there's seeds of that maybe potentially happening here, but like right now it's just too early to say. So I'm going to say foul on the larger discourse about the Wolves, like, not being a not being as good as last year, significantly not being as good as last year. It is just six games, so we're still in like the low sample size period for like real big stuff. To me, everything that's like going wrong is fixable. There isn't anything that I go like, that is a huge issue with the team. That is something that they're going to have to find a major switch for. To me, you talk about turnovers. They're turning it over at a similar rate than last year, which isn't a good thing. It's kind of hovering just above the bottom five, 23rd, 24th. If they can, they need to clean that up. The rebounding hasn't been great. That might not be fixable, but ultimately, let's see where they are in defensive rebound percentage. They are 17th. So defensive rebounding, they're around average, and it's probably better when Rudy is on the court, which is he's going to be down the stretch of games. And then the defense is maybe the most worrying part of it all that we'll talk about later. But ultimately, I really believe that they'll finish much closer to where they were last year than where they have been now. There's certainly like just so many things they got to work on that they need to do better with. But there's been enough flashes for me with them that I'm not fully ready to tear them down yet.
I don't think I clarified my point very well. I agree completely with you in that those areas I talked about, those areas of improvement, you know, you mentioned as well, two things that are very fixable. I agree. I think that they're very fixable. And that's why I called foul on this. I'm not at a state of panic with the Wolves yet, is that these are things that will be able to be rolled out and to be fixed out and to be, you know, taking some time really going through some real game reps now. And so if anything, I would say something I didn't mention earlier that was a little bit more of a concern is the energy level. Sometimes, you know, you want to blame the Spurs loss, which on a back-to-back, they got in late, early tip. I get that. But if you're a team that's trying to be a championship contender, you can't have games like that where you just, oh, we were just a little bit tired. We had an emotional win the night before. Like, you know, it's a scheduled loss. Well, good teams tend not to have those scheduled losses. So I'm not saying it's the end of the world, but I do think that that can't be an excuse. All those other things, though, the turnovers, the paint defense, transition, the rebounding, that'll all come back. And I surely believe that with the coaching staff that we have, I have faith.
Yeah, I agree. The San Antonio one is just really tough. If it was a normal back-to-back, I think I would kind of be closer to what you're saying. But because the Denver game was a late night game, so the amount of time between tip times was 22 and a half hours, excuse me. That is just not enough time. And to me, if you're like making the NBA schedule, games have to be within 24 hours. You have to have 24 hours or more between
minimum
games.
Right.
And if it's not, it has to be like a home back to back. Because otherwise, like, it's just such an unfair advantage for one of the teams. And that's fine in the sense of their first home win of the year is against Toronto coming off a back to back. And I remember looking at the schedule, they have more advantage rest games than they have disadvantage games. So it stinks to lose to San Antonio partly and due to the travel, but also they'll get another game back, potentially another team schedule. So there's 82 of them. So it's often not smart to look into one specific loss, but I agree that like something just quite isn't clicking. Energy has been an issue. I'm always kind of hesitant. Energy is always going to look bad during the losses, and it looked fine during the Denver win. So, but there's something not quite right going on, and it might just be the start of a season. My guess is just the Randall transition from Cat is going to take time. And I think when they looked good in the preseason and they looked and Randall has played well, we kind of maybe forgot that this was going to take time, but it was always going to be like tough out of the break. And ultimately they're still 3-3. That is by far plenty of time to start winning 50 games and get to the top of the West. There's so many other teams that are doing look much worse than they do. Denver, although they're also 3-3, looks significantly in a much worse spot than the Wolves. Like New Orleans isn't necessarily playing well. Sacramento just lost to the Toronto team that the Wolves beat. So I'm just not ready to be there's certainly still like the risks of the Cat trade still loom. But I'm not ready to fully embrace like that doomerism of the Cat trade has ruined a championship window.
Yeah, I like that, Ryan. Keeping perspective of it, I mean, you and I have watched enough Timberwolves games in our lives. And in a lot of my work at Canis Hoopus and just covering the team, I try to keep a wide lens on it to say that it could always be worse. And I'm not saying that should justify, okay, well, no matter what, as long as not as bad it was before. But I've seen what it's been like to cover and to watch a team that we should be worried about them. And right now, this is not one of those times. You talk about some of those other teams. I'm not going to dive into all 29 other teams, but I started this project. I'll probably tweet this out later. I did a little tier list about some of the other teams when thinking about, well, how bad or how concerned should we really be? And so there's like a level that have probably equally concerning. The next level is it could be worse. And then there's at least we aren't them. And then last is I'd rather be David Kahn. And so there is about 15 to 17 teams that I have on these tiers right there. So again, I do think that there may be a time to be worried. Right now is not the time to.
Yeah, I agree. Well, two names on the Wolves that if you were willing to worry about would be probably at the top of your list would be Mike Conley and Jaden McDaniels. Neither have played well to start the year. And some have wondered if some of the bench guys deserve a starting role. So Leo, how or foul that there should be a shakeup in the starting lineup, potentially with Mike Conley and or Jaden McDaniels?
Right now it's a foul for me. I think you give them another 5 to 8 games minimum before we decide to really make a big shakeup to that starting lineup, moving Mike most likely to the bench for Dante DiVincenzo, maybe Nickeil Alexander-Walker. We'll talk more about how great he's been lately, but if he's continuing to play at that level, then there's got to be a change to be made. And if it's not Mike, then yeah, as you mentioned, maybe it's Jaden McDaniels. But I do feel that we can't just sit here and be like quarter of the way through the season and be like, all right, let's continue to just bang our heads into the wall and keep trying this thing. Like, is Mike Conley actually cooked or is he really just taking some time? I believe it was Chris Hine, who is on the beat for the Wolves, that tweeted that there was either Chris or Jace Frederick that said that Mike Conley has always been a slow starter in October and he really ramps up starting in November. And so, yeah, he maybe didn't have a standout performance in these two last games, but I'm willing to give him time. I mean, the man is in his late 30s now. And so, you know, I'm willing to give him that. I think it's less to do with maybe perhaps Mike and Jaden coming out more than it is having someone else that could protect the paint other than Rudy. That's maybe the bigger issue that I'm worried about. And I don't know if that's something in the starting lineup. I mean, you don't take Rudy out. Julius Randle is playing great. There's no need to really take him out. It's not like there's someone else that's going to be offering great paint presence to come in to fix that. You know, as much as we love Dante and Nickeil, that's not really our weak points right now is perimeter defense. It's really about the interior. So for me, I'm saying foul. What about you, Ryan?
Yeah, I'm saying foul. If you're like looking for the areas why the Wolves haven't won as many games as you'd like, and ultimately, like we talked about last week, 2-1 will get them, if they win 2/3 of their games, they're going to hit the over on the season. Like, they're one win away from that. So, like, they're like one game behind pace. Like, so I think, like, you can't overreact to a single game, basically. But if you're looking for the reasons why they're not playing as well as you'd like, to me, Mike and Jaden are the main reasons. And especially why, like, I'm not willing to, like, denigrate the trade. Because ultimately, it wouldn't matter. If Kat was still on the team and Mike and Jaden were playing like this, you'd still be seeing the struggles. And ultimately, you might be seeing more struggles because you wouldn't have the extra depth DiVincenzo provides. So you might have, maybe you don't win the Dallas game or the Denver game without the trade. I don't know. But I'm going to go foul with changing up the starting lineup just for me because I think people overrate like who actually starts. It's about who finishes to me and who gets the minutes. And if I change this question to should Mike and Jaden see their minutes drop, I would say absolutely. Now, Mike hasn't really been playing large minutes, so that doesn't really match up there. But like Jaden has seen his minutes cut. At the end of the Denver game, they went with Na down the stretch. They've been playing DiVincenzo and Naz Reid more as much as they can. So that'd be my thing. Continue to keep the starting lineup probably even longer, like 20 games, as long as everyone's healthy. To me, that's not where you're going to see like an added benefit. It's more of you switch around the rotations, find different lineups that work, and just overall probably playing Mike and Jaden less, especially down the stretch of games potentially.
Yeah, I agree with you. I do think that there is some knobs to be played with by Coach Chris Finch to figure out, you know, who really should be getting more minutes. I mean, you talked about it just right now. Nickeil closed that game versus Denver, and he was absolutely on fire on both ends of the court. And so, yeah, maybe those are times where we need a little bit more of his minutes late in the game. And yeah, I'm 100% with you. I think if you change your starting lineup, make a big drastic change, that's just going to lend itself into a domino effect to creating more new issues now to deal with, right? Where mm-hmm. it's, okay, well, now it's not maybe necessarily the starting guard play, but maybe now it's, now Julius doesn't know how to fit around that, or he doesn't know how to, Rudy now maybe doesn't know how to play next to Nikhil as well as he does with Mike. And so there comes this domino effect. And so I think right now it's about finding a little bit of stability. And I don't think six games is enough yet right now to make that shake up.
Yeah, I agree. An interesting tweet I saw was from Jake Painting of Howls and Growls. In the 123 possessions that Jaden McDaniels, Mike Conley, and Joe Ingles have been off the floor, the Wolves have a 130 offensive rating, which is 99th percentile, 101.6 defensive rating, 94th percentile, a net rating of 29.3, 100th percentile. Their effective field goal percentage is 100th percentile. Their turnover rate, 94th, as in good. So basically, when you're two problem, really three problem people, if you throw in Ingles, when those guys aren't playing, so when the Wolves are playing their five best guys, they're playing as well as anyone in the NBA. And to me, that what that just signals is, if you can just get Jaden McDaniels and Mike Conley back to playing, not even good, but just like fine or mediocre, or even just like kind of bad, they're going to start, their numbers are going to start ticking up as a team. So ultimately, if like the discussion will be, is Mike Conley is cooked, if that's true, then yeah, the Wolves are probably in trouble and they're not going to win. If Jaden McDaniels isn't going to take a step forward or even a step back, yeah, the Wolves are going to be in trouble. But I ultimately don't think that these six games point to that yet. And it's going to be a while before like I'm willing to go all the way there. Awesome. On to topic three, the other main point of frustrating play for the Wolves is their defense, which finished by far first in the NBA. And if you rate it to what league averages, it was probably one of the best defenses of the past 10 years. And the Wolves have just not been close to that this year. They are 18th in defensive rating. That is just, if that continues all year, they're not going to get to where they want to be at the end of the year. So Leo, howl or foul that this Wolves defense is going to end the year much worse than it was last year?
I'm saying howl for this. I think the Wolves defense will end up worse than last year just because of how high the bar was set last year. They were out there like gangbusters on the defensive end. They were taking names. Everyone knew their role, and for good reason. This was last year was the second year of that Cat Gobert iteration. They really had a lot of time to figure things out. Elston Turner, one of the lead assistant defensive coaches under Chris Finch, really got them playing together on the same page. And I wish that there's an Elston Turner cam that could be on throughout these first six games, because the amount of times that the Wolves blow a rotation, or someone just didn't get back, or just matched up incorrectly, or they're playing, I don't know, God, why they continue to run this zone defense that is just getting mm-hmm. absolutely punked every time, where you see Elston Turner just kind of shrug his head every time and kind of shake his head like, oh, my God, like you could tell how frustrated that he is. And I would be just as frustrated as he was. It's understandable. I mean, Elston Turner has been a guy that has really gotten the Wolves to churn in a really, really impressive fashion on the defensive end, and they're not doing that. So I could see that all the work that he put in and Chris Finch put in the past just kind of went right out the window, and they got to start all over again, learn how to get everyone bought into their new roles. There are some changes. It's not so simple as Cat out, Randall in, and that's it. Like there's a lot of, you know, they're completely different players. Now the rotations are different. There's no more Kyle Anderson, who was just a huge safety net at the end of the play, where he can just come in, he can blow up a play, he can get a little steal, he could get a deflection. And we don't have that type of player. We have different great defensive players now. Dante is not a bad defensive player, but he's not a Kyle Anderson. And so I think personnel also comes into play there. I think this Wolves iteration may benefit from playing a little bit more similar to that 21-22 Wolves back, the Jared Vanderbilt days and Patrick Beverley days of, you know, flying around on the defensive end a little bit more, because they're lacking in size. It's obvious. Like Rudy is big, he is good, he will be able to clean up a lot of messes, but he can't do everything on his own. And so there does have to be a little bit more of, we have the personnel of a Jaden, of an Ant, of a Nikhil, of a Dante, who even Mike, who are very quick and agile, and they can get around the floor really fast. And so maybe they can't stop all the bleeding on the inside, but they could force a little bit more turnovers. And I mentioned the turnover percentage right now. They're, you know, bottom five in opponent turnover percentage, and they're bottom six in their own turnovers. So I think if they force a bit more turnovers, I can see that helping. So that being said, I just don't think it being the same level as last year. What about you?
Yeah, I'm going to go foul only that I don't think they're going to be much worse than last year. I still think they have the defensive talent to be top five in defensive rating this year. And like we just talked about, like Jaden is such a huge part of that defense because he's not just a good defender. Like obviously Nikhil is a good to great defender. Dante should be a good defender. Ant is a good defender on the wing. But Jaden is like all NBA special defender. And we just have not seen that even close to that at all this year. So to me, the minute that Jaden starts being Jaden again, at least on the defensive end, we'll see how his offense progresses. The minute that happens, they're going to skyrocket right into the top 10 again. And maybe Rudy's ankle has been bothering him more than has kind of been assumed. He's questionable for tomorrow night's game against Charlotte. So we'll see if he plays in that one. But I think this defense will rebound. And like I kind of said earlier, if it doesn't, it's time to start worrying about where this team can go. But yeah, they're 18th. They were by far first last year. I think they'll finish much closer to first than 18th. So basically top 10 for sure. And I think they'll be top five. And when we look at the offense, if you're looking at championship teams, your offense has got to be at least top 10. So if
right,
the only way you can get away with it not being top 10 is like last year when they're by far first. So if they're going to be fifth, and even like first is such a high bar at this point that even if they're just fifth, they're going to need to get up to top 10 offense, which they're closer to 12th right now. So still work to do.
I think with the defensive issues, we've seen it on the court, but on my game notes for the San Antonio Spurs loss the other day, half of my game notes are just defensive issues, like the mental lapses mm-hmm. that they're having out there. There's just so many straight line drives that they were giving up to Keldon Johnson, to Jeremy Sochan. These are young guys who are athletic, but they're not guys that are world beaters. Like no wonder Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving are getting whatever they want, because they're giving guys that are barely rotation players for a team that's not competing for a playoff spot, really, wide open looks over and over and over. And then not only are they throwing the ball away, but they're not getting back. How many times do you see Julius yeah. Randle, who has been playing great, just stopping after he turns it over? He thinks he gets a foul and he's just full, like face to face with a referee arguing as the entire play shifts. Otherwise, it's kind of what we used to see with Kat a lot of the days, right? And that was such a terrible thing. And, you know, I already mentioned the zone defense thing. I don't want to say that again. And I think Naz Reid does, as much as we love Naz Reid, freaking our podcast stems from the Naz Reid kind of saying that we have, but he's been really bad on the defensive end for the most part. I mean, there's been some good sequences, some good blocks here, there, a couple good stops and better rebounding, but he's allowing so many straight line drives and he's getting beat backdoor and a lot of backdoor cuts. And so it's pretty abysmal. And I think a lot of it has to do with the miscommunication that leads to the lack of execution. Again, that's, as we said earlier, I'm not that worried about it because that is something that will get better as the team gets more familiar.
Yeah. I just think this is a product of trading, making a trade basically the day before training camp, and that right. you didn't get the new guys in the summer. The game plan that the coaching staff came up with the whole offseason, a lot of it had to be let go because you have a whole new team. I just think the slow start defensively, and now it's obviously gone too far. If they're above average and just kind of doing what they're doing now, it makes sense. But like, I think I don't view what's going on as systemic issues that is like rooted in who they are in a team. I just think they're not playing well. And so I bet you can go back and find 6-game stretches where they were below average on defense last year. So unfortunately, they've taken that poor stretch and smacked it at the beginning of the year. But I think if they can, there's so much low hanging fruit that they can get up to closer to 10th, and then they can really start to showcase what made them special last year and get into that top 10, top five range. All right, next topic. The biggest thing for the game against the Nuggets in the playoff series, the Wolves employed the strategy that's pretty much league wide now, where they put Karl Anthony Towns on Nikola Jokic and put Rudy Gobert on off ball, Aaron Gordon in this case, allowing Rudy, their best defender, obviously, to lurk and help Kat defensively on Jokic. Now, without Kat, the question was, were they going to employ that strategy with Julius Randle, or were they going to have to switch back to a more traditional style of having Rudy guard Jokic? The answer to that was immediately answered with Gobert guarding Jokic as the primary option most of the game. So Leo Howler foul and that strategy guarding Jokic with Gobert instead of the power forward.
For me, I'm going to go with a foul just because I don't know if there's one person, especially on this Timberwolves team, that could guard Jokic straight up. It's fairly obvious that Jokic has always had Rudy's number in a one-on-one matchup, and that's okay. But that said, there were the more they try to make him into a passer, I don't know if that's good or bad, but I think it's the amount of help that's coming off that's going to be important. So can Rudy fend off Jokic long enough for help to come? We saw that late in the game when Nikhil was stunning at Jokic once he had the ball in his hands. Mike had a couple plays where he just tried to blow it up, just going really early, right on the catch, doubling and forcing him into some less than ideal passes. And so I think that's really the way. So having Gobert guard Jokic, I say foul on that because I don't think there's a better option out there. But I do think that it's not really possible with the team that we have. And you mentioned Aaron Gordon earlier. I mean, if Aaron Gordon is going to be playing like Steph Curry every time he plays the Timberwolves, there's not really much you could do about that. Yeah. I mean, he shot 5 of 7 from three. And some of the, I was rewatching the game and some of these shots he was hitting, he literally looked like Steph Curry. There's one, it was end of the shot clock and it was like a blown up play. And he had the ball 1-on-1 against Nas and he started dribbling the ball through his legs back and forth behind his back, step back and hits a three on Nas Reed. Like he's been doing this his whole career. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, if that's going to happen, then yeah, there's no way we can guard Jokic the way that we can. Cause everyone else is turned into freaking the dynasty Golden State Warriors. So yeah, you know, for me, I'm going to say foul, but I don't have really a better answer. How about you?
Yeah, I'm going to go howl. I think this is the way they should go. They should with their starting unit out there. I think the best thing is to put Gobert on Jokic. The lurking thing, I don't think that Grandal has the size. He certainly has the strength and the weight to go with Jokic as much as anyone does. No one really has the physicality for such a great player like Jokic. But to me, the length of Cat was like such a big thing that made the passes just a little bit harder. They all talked about in the locker room of you got to make him work. You got to make Jokic work. If it's easy out there for him, he's going to pick you apart. And he might pick you apart anyway. But you got to make him work. And to me, the Rudy gives them the best chance to make him work. Now, what I did like seeing them do was they did switch it up. When Nas and Gobert were sharing the court, they had Nas on Jokic a little bit. Randall guarded him a few possessions. That to me, that's give him different looks. He's probably gonna pick out everything you do. That's fine. He apparently with 6 minutes left, he knew the Wolves play that was running, which is just insane. Gobert and Ant were talking about that in the locker room, just like how does he's cheating? They said he's cheating. So I don't. That's just insane. But like you said, I don't think they really have a better option. That's to me the main downside is of this trade is that Denver doesn't go from like this amazing matchup that you have, and now it's probably a neutral matchup.
Denver's got bigger problems though than the Timberwolves right now. So,
which if you're at this point, it seems like Dallas and Oklahoma City are the two teams you should probably be worried about, and I think the new trade kind of fits better with those teams. So sacrificing a Denver advantage might not be the worst thing. But yeah, like you, I think they don't really have a better option. And at the very least, in a regular season setting, it's probably good to get Rudy the reps of guarding Jokic. And I thought he did a pretty good job, especially at the end. He talked about that potentially game time three from Jokic, that his plan was to foul up three. And he saw, this kind of reminds you of something Jokic would do, where Jokic was trying to, Rudy said that he saw Jokic like trying to draw the foul or trying to, the minute Rudy touched him, he was going to try to go up for three and try to get three free throws. And Rudy's like, well, I was going to foul, but he's clearly trying to get three free throws. So I'm just going to play defense, get a contest. And he did. So I think that shows that like as much as anyone can guard Jokic, hopefully Gobert can kind of do as well as anyone can.
Yeah, I do have to give Gobert his credit. I mean, we don't have to dive deeper into the whole Christian Brown dunking on him and you know, that type of thing. But you know, as much as Jokic really got his against Gobert, and he always has, I mean, Gobert still put up 17 points, 14 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, and 2 blocks. And so I'm not saying that Gobert on the offensive end is what's going to take to really even out his matchup against Jokic. But again, again, credit to Rudy. He played a really solid game despite the optics of what it looked like. And so credit to him. I don't want to bury the lead here, but I mean, you said maybe we'd have a better option here, but Jesse Edwards, is that someone with length and athleticism? I don't know, Ryan. I'm just putting the name out there. So
I don't think he was in the building that night. He's not from what I saw. So he was on a G League assignment, I think. So at the very least, not an option for the first Denver matchup. Well, you mentioned backup center. Wolves don't really have a true backup center. I know people probably think of Nas as a center. He's not. To be honest, he's kind of closer to small forward than he is at center at this point. But they don't have a backup center. So howl or foul on that. To me, I'm going to go howl or foul on if they need a true backup center. And to me, I'm going to go foul only in this sense that if they can find a buyout guy that gets you a small role, that's fine. That's good. In a long regular season, probably good to have that type of player. But ultimately, they don't have minutes. They don't have minutes for that player. Even if they could get DeAndre Jordan from the Nuggets, that'd be fine. That's a fine 11th man. That's like playing case of emergency. But just like Denver doesn't play Jordan. So to me, they just don't have minutes. So it's just not a big worry. We're all trying to look for minutes for Minot and Dillingham and Shannon. And I mean, obviously a lot of people want the Ingles minutes to go to those guys. I don't necessarily disagree, but they don't have a role. They have 8 solid guys that need to play 30 plus minutes. That doesn't leave room. And I know it's frustrating to hear for people that want extra minutes. And certainly I think like a game like San Antonio on a back-to-back, like I said, with the time difference could or should have been a game that they found those minutes, but on in a big sample, they don't have the minutes. And I kind of hope people can understand that a little bit more.
Yeah, I think for me as a how or foul for the Wolves need to find a true backup center, I'm going to say how, but again, really echoing what you're saying, I do think it would be great if they could find a true backup center, but there's just, like you said, there's no minutes for it right now. It's really tough considering that of the 8 main rotation guys that you mentioned, only one really provides any type of paint presence on both ends of the court as a lob threat vertically and also just as a vertical defender as well too. So I joked about Jesse Edwards earlier. Yeah, he's probably shouldn't be seeing any minutes, but even if he did, I think with Naz Reid, a lot of people say, oh yeah, he's a big, he's a big. Well, yeah, he's a big, but he's not a center, right? And so with that, I say how that maybe Naz Reid can find the backup center version of himself. And I only say that just because of my belief in Naz Reid. He really shaped himself because if you remember when he came in to the NBA undrafted, that he was this heavy set, you know, wasn't in shape, which is okay. This is just a lumbering big that can kind of like have some ball skills. That's about it. He couldn't really shoot threes like that, or he wasn't known to, at least. He couldn't really move the way that he did. And he really warped himself into knowing, okay, well, Kat is the main center here and I will back him up. And then once, we started kind of developing that, okay, well, maybe Rudy's here. So maybe I need to develop even more as closer to a wing than the forward. Then he started developing those skills. And so I think Naz does have that ability to really shape-shift. And I think Chris Finch talks about it in media availability one of these days that he's been so great being a chameleon, being able to warp himself into the role that we need. And so do I see the inklings of him becoming a really solid center behind Rudy? Maybe not right now, but I would love to see maybe he can find that. Maybe he can really focus on, okay, well, now I'm not saying you have to change your body completely, but like let's focus on what can you offer with paint protection. I mean, we did see flashes of it. I mean, think about game 7 in Denver of the playoffs. Naz Reid had a couple really solid plays against Nikola Jokic guarding him straight up. And yeah, both guys were, Jokic was probably tired at a grueling end of a series, but Naz Reid really did well in some of those minutes late in the game. And so again, maybe he can find that. Maybe he can turn that into something else, but who knows? There are guys, for those of you who've been following the Wolves long enough, maybe Chris Johnson, does that ring a bell to you? What about a Jeff Adrian? How about a Greg Steemsma? Okay, maybe some of those guys can lace them back up and find him. But again, my point being is that, you know, maybe we won't find a guy out there right now. DeMarcus Cousins playing 3-on-3. Is that what I hear? No, but who knows? But I do think the Wolves have to figure something out and who's going to play behind Rudy, because right now it's a little bit rough.
Yeah, I agree that like that's an area, the backup center minutes are an area that they need to figure out and improve, and the rebounding and it's not been good so far. But to me, I don't believe that that's going to come from a signing or a trade, just because they're not going to trade any of their top guys. And so that doesn't leave a gigantic role.
Right. Now I'm with you.
All right. We move on. Our Apex Alpha of the week, who is the leader of the pack for the Timberwolves this week? I will start my Apex Alpha, Nickeil Alexander-Walker. Basically came into that Denver game. They were down 8 with about 3-4 minutes left. He comes in for the aforementioned Jaden, who's been struggling, and just immediately makes an impact of the game. So they go down 10. And Nikhil hits two big threes, gets two free throws to set the game up for Ant to seal. And you could just tell how proud is a little bit the wrong word, but how excited he was to be able to do that. And he was, especially like Finch, he was so excited that Finch was calling plays for him down the stretch of games. And it's just, Nikhil has been dynamite all year this year. One of their few players that has just been A+ from start to finish. And he basically swung that Denver game for him, coming in, providing great defense, hitting big shots.
Yeah, Ryan, I would second that, but you got to call Nikhil by his real name now that Ant gave him. Nikhil Alexander M. Effin Walker. Okay, that is his name from now on. That's what Ant was shouting as he was going down the tunnel after that Denver win. And I love it. I've mentioned this time and time again. I have no shame in saying it. Nikhil is one of my favorite players on the team. And you just see that how much it energizes the team when he's really getting after it on both ends. I always think back to that. Again, we talk about the Denver series from a couple months ago. He loves taking that challenge on. You see him smiling. You see him really working and getting around screens, getting in their shirts and getting their jerseys and hitting shots. I mean, he was one of the many players that missed a lot of shots in the Spurs game, but he was still working his ass off on the defensive end. So I love Nikhil as that apex alpha for you.
Yeah, I keep coming back to this. There are very few teams that have an eighth man like Nikhil. And especially when you look at like Denver, who is just struggling to find any sort of bench. They have their top five guys are great. We talked about Brown making that fun dunk over Rudy. They have their top five is great. But unfortunately, like Jamal goes out with a concussion. And if the Wolves' second best player went out during that game, that it would obviously been a different game. But they don't have anyone to replace them. Where if the Wolves did lose, like they basically lost Jaden that game, they had another replacement to come in. And that is just such a stark difference, especially Denver's the other extreme, where they just have five guys, and that's pretty much it. Where they're going to win games like that. Their bench already won them the Nuggets game. They probably won them all three games because, like we said, the starting lineup hasn't been great. So it's just such a luxury to have Nikhil in there. And like Nas could have been that player to come in and do well, and Dante could have been that player too. So that just the eight-man depth, I don't know if it doesn't seem like they have the depth beyond that eight, but certainly the top eight has just been fantastic.
Yeah. Nikhil scored all eight of his points in that fourth quarter against the Nuggets, right? And so I'm being a little bit hyperbolic right here with it, but Naz Reid has talked about, okay, what kind of deals you need to get during the summer? And Nikhil's probably going to have to go. We can't afford him, whatever the case is, but we're going to have to, Charles Barkley meme, we're going to have to start a dialogue about whether or not Nikhil Alexander-Walker is going to be a priority this offseason. Because if he continues playing this way, I have a hard time thinking in a world where Tim Connelly's like, you know what, that's fine. Like, let's let him walk and let's just focus on someone else. And so we'll see when that time comes. If he's playing like this, yeah, I love it.
Yeah, the discussion of the Wolves' three potential free agents, Naz Reid, Julius Randle, and Nikhil, we'll table that until at least the trade deadline there, unless there's some news. But yeah, it's a good point that it's going to be extremely difficult, if not impossible, to retain all three. So the Wolves will have to decide potentially which of the two that they want to move forward with. And Nikhil is obviously making a fantastic case to be one of those people. All right, Leo, your apex alpha is who?
I'm going with Anthony Edwards as my apex alpha. Yes, again, he was my apex alpha last week, and he is again this week. And it's hard not to pick him when you're on a nationally televised game and you have yet another epic comeback that was led by, yes, Nikhil, but also by Anthony Edwards as well, too. He was leading both on and off the court. What I really loved about it, other than the fact that he's hitting threes and kind of doing his thing, that, you know, he's putting up points and all that stuff, is that he's really seen a bit, showing a bit more of that self-control and not allowing himself to just kind of hero ball himself out of a game. He saw it in Sacramento a couple weeks ago where he's hitting shots from perimeter, he's hot, but then he finishes the game with basically a game-winning drive that Sabonis fouls him on, and then he shoots two free throws that basically seal the game. Now, in this game against the Nuggets, he was shooting 7 of 14 from three. He was hitting shots. He had just hit a big three, and then he pulled up, I think, in the next position. He missed a three. He's kind of a heat check. And then when he did have that ball, when the Wolves had a chance to take that final lead, he very easily could be like, you know what? I'm 7 for 14. I can shoot another three. That's a great shot. No one can stop that. But instead, he gets Michael Porter Jr. guarding him, and then he just takes him right off the bounce. It hits a beautiful floater, a shot that he's really been showing off this year. And that's just a huge sign of maturity to me, is that he's picking the right spots to drive. And again, for the win as well, too. So I love that. I just love that development. If he really has a consistent floater game that he can adapt into his now really fierce three-point shooting, and obviously the way that he can finish at the rim, that's a legit three-level score that can't be stopped right there. And so he's my apex alpha. He dropped the first big quotables, I feel like, of the season as well, too. And I mentioned them earlier when he said, Nikhil Alexander, MF and Walker. But also when Dane had asked him post-game, I forgot which game it was. I think it was a Nuggets game about...
Denver game.
Oh, yeah. About, you know, what do you say to the people that say that you're shooting too many threes? And he just said, F them. Like, just straight up two words, right? Two words, right? That's what we love here. And so it's funny to see, because, I mean, even though he is shooting a lot of threes, I saw this from Aaron Gleeman on Twitter. He says, through in NBA history, through five games, who has made the most three-pointers in their first five games? And of that list of five players, it's Steph Curry, it's Steph Curry, it's Steph Curry. And then there's also Anthony Edwards right in the middle of it. So he's made 29 threes, which is second most in the first five games of NBA history. The only person that's done more was 33 by Steph Curry, but Ant's now sole second place in that, which is crazy to think given the type of player that he is. So Ant is my apex alpha.
Yeah. Ant is apex alpha. Might as well be an evergreen segment. I'm fine with that. Maybe we need a new catchy title for the Ant segment of the week. But I agree with you down the stretch of that game. He was so impressive to get that win against Denver. We had talked about his three-point volume, and it continues to rise since we last talked about it, and he's continued to knock down shots. Like you said, F him if people think he's shooting too much, because he's hitting like 40% on highest volume in the league. That's an extremely valuable player. But what I was especially glad to see was down one, 20-something seconds left, instead of taking a step back three, which he occasionally takes a ill-advised shot, he got to the rim, or at least got to the paint, shot a floater that hasn't always been in his bag, and knocked it down for the win. And that's like the biggest thing, is like the threes are great, the making them at the rate is great, but there are going to be times, especially in the playoffs, where you need 2 points. You need 1 point. You just need any sort of offense. And so you're not worried about effective field goal percentage. You're just worried about regular field goal percentage, which 2 point shots are going to get you better looks there. So he's just so impressive. And anytime, like the biggest thing the whole first half of this pod was just, should we worry about this? Should we worry about that? And a lot of this time is just, these worries aren't going to matter with Anthony Edwards on the team. He's just going to carry you to wins that you don't expect to win, that you don't probably shouldn't have won. And so there's certainly things to worry about that you should be worried about. But ultimately, Ant is going to carry this team to where it wants to go. And hopefully a lot of the other negatives are just going to kind of melt away.
Yeah, you're kind of seeing it already pay dividends in his shot selection. Yes, he is shooting a lot of threes, but I have to imagine that the threat of him shooting those three-pointers is allowing him to get to the rim for those floaters or for those finishes. Like, I mean, Michael Porter Jr. isn't a great defender by any means, but you got to think that he was imagining, okay, Ant's probably going to pull up and shoot a three. And that's why Ant got, you know, by him, when blew right by him to his left, like so easy for uncontested floater, basically for the win. Mm-hmm. And so you can tell that all the Nuggets players were not ready for him to shoot that shot. No one rotated over. No one came up at the nail for help. They were like, okay, well, he's either going to shoot a three or he's going to kind of kamikaze drive to the rim. And he didn't do either of those. He found that in-between game. He didn't take a turn around, pull up, bang shot off the glass, like, you know, to try and hit the game winner. Like, he hit the best and most efficient shot right there at that point in time in the game.
Yep, absolutely. Well, we'll stick with the Denver game, moving on to prey of the week, because my prey was the Denver Nuggets at large, because the Wolves just kind of continue to beat them. They clearly just, like we've talked about, they have this new roster, the Wolves do, and Denver does to a certain extent as well, and the Wolves just beat them again. In a similar fashion, where it seemed like with 3 minutes left, Denver had a 10-point lead, and the Wolves just snatched it from them again. So I just wonder, similar to kind of Dallas, where it seems like Dallas just for whatever reason has the Wolves' number, it just seems like the Wolves have Denver's number. And to me, the biggest thing is obviously the Denver bench is like a huge issue for them, but the Nuggets do not have anyone to guard Anthony Edwards, and that's like, and they don't have the two biggest things for like suppressing Ant would be just like a superior wing defender to put on him, like a Jaden McDaniels type the Wolves have, or a lockdown post center. And Jokic is a good defender and has overachieved in that throughout his career. I mean, they won a title and had a very good defense with him. But he's not like a traditional ring protector and like Rudy or Gafford with the Mavs. So the Nuggets don't have either of the two big things that, to me, affect Ant. And so Ant will always be a good matchup for them. And especially like watching Murray, and obviously he had a concussion, so or at least was in the protocols for one, so it's hard to pile on him too much. But like, he just looks slow and just doesn't have it. And that's one of the biggest things with Denver. I mean, obviously Jokic is just the mastery of the game of basketball. But their two-man game with Murray and Jokic is like the biggest thing, reason why they win games and why they won the title and why they took that series to seven. Because without the Jokic-Murray two-man game, that series would have been over long before that incredible game seven. So I just think, do you agree with me that the Wolves just have like the Denver's name here?
Yeah, I think it's a mental thing now at this point. It has to be. There's no way they can't think about this now that in the biggest moment of the season last year, they crumbled. And that, again, in this, there's so much talk about, Tim Connelly built the Timberwolves just to beat the Nuggets, right? Where it's like, they have these two bigs that can really limit Cat, blah, blah, blah. Well, this year we don't anymore. And we still managed to come back to beat them. And again, I'm not saying that it's the same Nuggets team. Obviously, they're not the same team. But yeah, I do feel a little bit bad that I would be sick if I was a Nuggets fan right now watching that game unfold, like watching them blow that comeback. And then also Jamal Murray exists in concussion protocol. The bench is still absolutely frigid for them. They don't have, who's their promising young talent really on their team right now? Is it Christian Brown? Is it Peyton Watson? You don't
Strother
really know.
In the preseason.
Right. Yeah. So Strother, maybe, and he didn't play that much against them because again, when the Wolves play him, I think it's funny. We talk about some of the ways the Wolves have struggled, as you mentioned, but on the optimistic side, on the inverse side of it, Nuggets still had Michael Porter Jr. And Aaron Gordon, who hit a crazy amount of shots they don't usually hit. Yes, I understand Michael Porter Jr. is a good three-point shooter, but some of the shots that he hit were insane jump shots at the end of the shot clock that was heavily contested. So again, they got, on that end of the spectrum in terms of, the shot variance and shot luck, yet they still dropped that game despite Aaron Gordon and Michael Porter Jr. playing like that. And so, yeah, I'm with you. Nuggets for sure, prey of the week. For me, my prey of the week is also in that same vein, is Russell Westbrook. I will pronounce his name correctly and say Russell Westbrook. In that, again, I am not a Russ hater. I think he could be a little hot. I think he maybe is having trouble accepting the type of player that he is now. On the court, at least, I'm sure off the court, I've heard nothing but good things of him as a teammate. But he made some key plays in the fourth quarter, and he did have to play a lot of minutes after Jamal Murray went out. So you can't say he was a part of that 12-point comeback in the fourth quarter by the Nuggets where he took a 10-point lead. But he was also 1-for-8. And that one shot he made was like kind of wild in transition scoop layup that he kind of made. That, again, he can make that shot, but he was 0-for-7 before that. Or he was, 0-for-6 before that shot. And he's really struggled against Minnesota in the last 3 years. I don't want to go so far and belabor this and really like kind of go at Russ. But since he's returned back to Western Conference after he was on the Wizards, he joined the Lakers and the Clippers, now Denver. In those 9 games, he's 1-of-8 against the Timberwolves. 1 win, 8 losses, and he's averaging a minus 9.7. A couple of those losses are huge, 18-point, 20-point, 24 losses. There's that moment when him and Jaden got into it, throwing the ball back and forth at each other. There was that point where Kat and Patrick Beverley trolled his air ball. Yep, looking around, what happened there? There's also that play in the next game where Ant came up and just two-handed blocked him. They called a foul, but he two-handed blocked and just ripped that ball away from like a child. He also had a game recently who went 3-of-11. And then again, today he was a team worst minus 15, 1-for-8. And so Russ is really struggling against the Timberwolves. And I almost kind of feel bad for him because he's, we know what type of player he is. We know the MVP player that he was before. And he's just not quite that. And even last game, there were highlights that he was involved in where he was on the receiving end of it. I think it was end of the first quarter. Ant hits this really sick step back three-pointer in his grill. Crowd goes wild at the end of the quarter with a couple of seconds left. Russ dribbles up, classic Russ fashion, pulls up for a free throw line jumper and just clanks that off the side. It's just like, that's tough. So Russ is my prey of the week.
Yeah, I remember in the offseason, the kind of the when KCP left the Nuggets and they were their media and their fans were looking at like what is going to improve with this team, and kind of the two pieces they pointed to were, from what I saw, Russell Westbrook and Dario Saric. And my immediate thought was like, that's pretty rough. Saric, from the Wolves, know that like he wasn't even that great when he was here, and that was a long time ago. And with Westbrook, I think if he's like your backup point guard that plays 10 minutes a game, I think that's fine. That's a fine role from him. And especially like he'll have nights where he's rolling and you can play him and certain matchups will work out. And that's great. He's certainly still an NBA player. He did have a rough night, but he's their sixth man right now. Pretty much. Part of this is because Murray was out, but he was their highest minutes played off the bench. Going back quick, we mentioned young player Christian Brown is probably their good young player, up and coming player. He looked really good, but going back to Westbrook, him and Saric are not going to be the saviors. I mean, maybe if other pieces around their bench were fine, those would be solid backup power forwards and point guards. But their whole season, Denver is going to come down to, can they get this bench to just regular bad? And if they can get it to from like just league average, they'll be title favorites with Jokic. But they're just so far away from that. And Westbrook is such a big part of why that bench is struggling.
Yeah, one of my intrusive thoughts or actions that I do sometimes is after a big Wolves win or comeback, I like to go and click around in the Twitter of the world of the team that just lost and kind of see how are they taking that loss. And you know it's bad when Nuggets fans on Twitter were looking around and they're tweeting out like, man, I miss Reggie Jackson, or man, I miss Bones Highland. Like, woof, like that's what you're missing now. It's like, again, I'm sure the Nuggets will also figure it out. Jokic is still, I think, in my opinion, the best player in the game right now. So I'm not saying that they're absolutely cooked, but I will say that I do have the Denver Nuggets on my Are You Worried power rankings in the third level with, well, it could be worse for us right now. We could be the Denver Nuggets right now. So that's where I have them on that. So yeah, hopefully, you know, I love Mike Malone. I hope they figure it out. But right now they're not in our crosshairs, I think, as a team that, hey, we got to worry about this team.
Yeah, and similar to the Wolves, like it's better to have this problem now. They have 80 sure. or 70 something games to figure it out, and I'm to a certain extent, I think they will. They'll win 45 plus games at dead minimum, but from like a and in the playoffs, like the bench issues will go down. They'll be able to play Jokic. They played him 40 minutes in this game. They'll be able to play their other starters more minutes, which they'll be able to stagger in more. So like the issue will go down, but ultimately it'll be interesting from a Wolves perspective just to kind of see how they do all year, because they're still title contenders and a team that won the title just 2 years ago. So finally, moving on to our two words, basically our two words to describe their current state of the Wolves. For me, I'm going to go with soft schedule. Now, this is not looking at their season-wide schedule, but their next six games are all winnable, and ideally you'd like to probably go 5-1, if not 6-0. So Charlotte, the Bulls, they got three games against the already tanking Blazers. The aforementioned game we talked about with the Heat is sandwiched in there too. So those three Portland games, they play them three times in the span of 6 days. That's pretty insane. Unfortunately, kind of feels like they'll probably lose one of those games just because like it's hard to beat a team three times in six games, but also Portland's pretty bad. And two of the three games are back-to-backs, although two of them are back-to-back in Portland. That is weird to play in an opposing arena and back-to-back nights. But what do you think about, can the Wolves go 6-0 in this stretch, 5-1, or unfortunately is like their struggle is going to kind of keep them at 4-2?
Well, last time you asked me, can the Wolves start 3-0, or what do you think they're going to start in the first three games? I said 3-0, and I was wrong. They went 2-1. And so this time I'm going to say that they'll go 5-1 just to not jinx it again and say they're going to go 6-0. They end up losing one. But yeah, I mean, Ryan, those teams, there is one team, as you mentioned, the Miami Heat, that I have in my second level of my power rankings of probably equally concerning as us about how their makeup is of their team right now. They have a lot of question marks about how that team is going to move, not even just this season, but moving forward right now. Mm-hmm. But all the other teams are on those like top levels of I'd rather be David Conner, at least we're not them right now. So yeah, absolutely. I do think that soft schedule will help. And again, hopefully beating up against, I would say beating up against like lower teams, but you saw that against the Raptors. I mean, we really got to get going and really show off, okay, well, what could this team look like when they're starting to fire on all cylinders? So yeah, I do think soft schedule is very, very appropriate.
Yeah, I will say, I really, early in the season is not when you want to be playing these tanking teams, because like especially like Portland, likely by the end of the year they're gonna have traded even half their rotation ready guys. Chicago probably won't do that, and Charlotte probably won't do that, so it's not a big of an issue. But like looking at the schedule, the Wolves play Utah in the final game of the year, Brooklyn second to last game of the year, like. They play Brooklyn twice in April. Like, these are the times you likely want to play these teams, and not early in the year. But ultimately, if they're able to get wins, it doesn't much matter. And these are certainly teams that the Wolves should be able to go string some wins against.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I mean, I don't want to put the Spurs in the same bracket because they do have a future Hall of Famer on their team that is probably not going to allow them to tank as hard as they did last year. But yeah, I mean, as you mentioned earlier in the season, they are a little bit more feisty. But man, have you seen any Blazers games? And I hate to say, I've watched quite a few Blazer games so far right now. It is not looking good. And Chauncey Billups is, I don't know how much more leash he's going to get as the coach of that team, because they are not bought in right now. They're kind of a mess. So again, I don't want to jinx it, but those are teams right now that I'm not really worried about. So
yeah, I mean, San Antonio's probably on the similar level of their next two games, Charlotte and Chicago. But San Antonio on the second night of a back-to-back is a lot different than any team on the set. Like, I don't know, what would you like if you play the 20th ranked team on the second night, 20th ranked team on a normal sense, that team probably it is more gonna be on the level of like the 12th team, like that, especially like with the time issues. So like, I don't know. I'm not too fazed by the San Antonio loss. They're not, I don't think they're nearly as bad as last year. Like, just watching them, they have way more like NBA rotation level guys. Like Chris Paul is such a big deal for them. H Barnes is a quality NBA player, one of your sack buddies. But yeah, home Charlotte, at Chicago, three Portland games, and then a Miami game. Hopefully they can win a bunch of those. But Leo, your two words to close us out.
My two words are growing pains. In the eternal words of the great philosopher Malik John Mikhail Beasley, Rome wasn't built in a day. He said this about 3 years ago when the Wolves are trying to figure it out right now. And we knew that this was going to happen. We knew that in some way, shape, or form that the Wolves were going to struggle a little bit. We talked about it earlier about how the team got a huge change right before training camp. So there was obviously going to be some things that they're going to have to build that car as they're driving it type of thing right now. And so there's some things that they're justifiably behind, and we talked about that earlier, the defense, the transition, the rebounding, blah, 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 blah. But there's some things that they are ahead of the curve as well, too. We talked about how, oh, well, the Wolves are going to shoot more threes before the season start. Well, I mean, they are top 10, top five in shooting threes right now, both in percentage and in attempts made right now. So they are ahead of the curve in some ways. So I think, you know, I mentioned it earlier, there may be a day that we should be worried about some of these pains being like, okay, well, maybe there's just something foundationally wrong with this team. But I think we're far from that right now. And I think these are just, you know, those growing pains that you have. I remember, you know, back in the day watching those young Wolves growing up, and, you know, with Wiggs and Kat, and when Ricky was still here, it's that you knew that it was going to be a season long of growing pains, that there wasn't necessarily going to be a payoff at the end of that season. We're talking about season long growing pains, but this is just part of one small segment, I think, of growing pains in just this one season alone. I think by the time that this calendar year flips over to 2026, that will be looking a lot better than we are right now in theory. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree. I think there's like rightful discussion about like, are the growing pains worth it for a team that is looking to win the title? Should they have put themselves in a position where growing pains were going to be a thing? I think there's good discourse to be had about that. Personally, to me, it's just, we're going to have to wait. Unfortunately, it's going to take a year or two before we can really, same with the Gobert trade. Luckily, them kind of going to the Western Conference Finals, I think, has paid off the Gobert trade and more. And the Cat trade is going to take some time. If they struggle this year, then yeah, it's not going to look good. If they make the Western Finals again, obviously, that trade will get praised. So I think people want to overreact, and that's completely fine. Not telling people what to do, but for me, I'm going to keep waiting till at least the 20 game marks before I really start making grand conclusions about what this team is going to be.
100%. I'm with you on that. We got time. Time's on our side right now, and I'm going to try to enjoy the ride as much as I can.
Yep, for sure. Awesome. Well, looking at our schedule for next week, Leo and I will be back next week. I'm hoping to have another episode for you guys this Wednesday, but Wolves tomorrow night against Charlotte. Weird game tip-off time. I was trying to figure out why it's at 8 p.m. Central. The reason is that every single NBA team is playing tomorrow. So this is in advance of Election Day where no one plays on Tuesday. That said, please go out and vote. Very important. Certainly not going to tell you who to vote for, but just please go out and vote. But yeah, they play Charlotte at 8 p.m. Central. All the games are like 15 minutes apart. So if you're looking for a league pass night, it should be a fun one, just watching games come down to the end. And then a back-to-back where they're in Chicago. I'll be at that one, driving out to Chicago. And then home against Portland to close out the work week. Leo, anything else?
It's going to be a fun week. I think it will be better than last week. Not just because it's my birthday, but I think that, as you mentioned, it'll be a favorable schedule for the Wolves. Hug your loved ones, spend time with your friends and family. It may be a wild week, as you mentioned, Ryan, with election season coming up. So yeah, do your due diligence, go out, make your voice be heard, and we'll see you all soon. Make sure you drive safe.